Well, it's a match made in heaven. Now, their love story has been seen around the world.
I, Beecher, take you, April.
I, April, take you, Beecher.
I vow to love and honor you.
Promise to remain by your side.
I do.
I do.
This is the story of how a seemingly perfect Christian couple went against evangelical culture to embrace their authentic selves and found a healthier marriage in the process.
This is the Non-Binary Marriage Podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome back to this episode of The Non-Binary Marriage. I'm Beecher.
And I'm April.
And this week, we have the honor of hearing April's story.
Woo!
Now, you've told this a few times before, because I will say her story is crazier than mine. The world that she was in is more wild. And you've told a story similar to this on Evangelicalish and a few other podcasts, right?
Yeah, I co-host Evangelicalish, so I told the purity culture aspect of this story, a short version of it, on the A Modest is Hottest episode. And then I've also been a guest on a few podcasts where I've told my, you know, deconstruction story, which this is a part of that. But this is actually the first time I've publicly been able to talk about, which I haven't yet, that'll be episodes coming, but talk about Beecher and, you know, them coming out as non-binary and their struggle, because that's obviously also been a huge part of my deconstructing and deconstruction of my faith that I wasn't able to talk about before because Beecher was not out for some safety reasons.
Absolutely. And those episodes are going to be amazing. But today we're focusing on you.
Today you may have, some of you, if you follow me or have listened to my story, may have heard some of this, but I'm going to go into a little more detail on the purity culture.
And here's the difference. I get to ask the questions, and y'all, I know things that you don't. So this is going to be fun. Stick around for it. So, okay, I want to start off by saying that obviously last episode we talked about how I grew up, gender dysphoria, and my involvement with purity culture, which purity culture for me was very much about using it as an excuse not to have to engage with any talk or activity that is sexual or gender related. Mm-hmm. No one really celebrated me for being in purity culture because I was labeled as a boy. And that is not something that at least in my culture, is really lifted up. So I think it's
going to be... Right, because they expect boys to like have sex anyway. It's right. Like, boys will be boys, you know? That's just what they do. But The girls, you better close those legs.
Exactly.
That's your whole worth.
I'm fascinated to be able to have done the previous episode, which talked about me being in the gendered boy category, dealing with purity culture, and now you in that same thing. But before we get to all of that, just start at the beginning. Tell us about little April.
Little April. Little April was born not so little at 9 pounds, 13 ounces.
Oh my gosh, we're going way back.
No, I know. So I grew up, my dad was a pastor and an evangelist. My grandfather was also a pastor. My grandfather and my dad co-pastored a large church in Dallas that we had around 4,000-ish members, which for the 80s and 90s was pretty large. My dad and grandfather were on local radio and TV in Texas area, Dallas area. And so they were somewhat well known. Like, even now, sometimes people will come up to me and recognize my name and be like, oh, are you related to so-and-so? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's my grandfather.
How old were you when you were singing on stage?
I started singing on stage when I was 2, actually.
We have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, almost 3-year-old. I can't imagine our kids doing that because they're not savants like April.
No, and I, like, there's actual video of me being 2 and singing. And I apparently walked up at the end of one of my dad's sermons in Tonga, which is the country, when he was doing the prayer at the end. And I walked up on stage and tugged on his little pant leg and said, can I sing, Daddy? And I sang Jesus Loves the Little Children. It's my very first song.
Your beginnings are so much more filmic and cinematic than mine. These are movie scenes.
It's a movie thing. And then I started singing before he would preach. And we would travel. So whenever we were home in Dallas, my dad would preach at the church. That was my grandfather's church. But then throughout a lot of the year, we'd probably be traveling half the year in a motorhome. Travel to different churches. My dad would preach. I would sing. My mom also sang. My brothers also sang for a while. We also traveled around the world. So by the time I was 18, I had been to over 30 countries. Sometimes we would be on Christian television. Like, I sang on the Jim Baker Show one time when I was a teenager, an original song called America Say Jesus.
America Say Jesus.
Yes. A little Christian nationalism was thrown in there. Very Republican also. But that's not really what the focus of this. That's a whole nother topic. One thing that was really stressed to me growing up from my dad and my mom a little bit, but also just from the culture, was that girls need to be pure and save themselves for marriage. And yeah, boys too, like they were always included in the talk, but the pressure and it just kind of fell on the girls to be the ones to say no. Like you couldn't expect the boys to, because they can't control their urges, you know? So women, it was your job to say no to them. It was your job to make sure you dressed appropriately, that no certain types of skin were showing, your shoulders were covered and your legs were covered, that your shorts weren't too short. And I'm a very tall girl, so finding shorts that were long enough was nearly impossible that would pass the length test. So I remember like having to wear pants at summer camp and like church events in 100-degree Texas heat because, you know, purity culture. Boys couldn't know that I had legs, because if they saw them, whew, what would they do? There's this pressure to stay pure. I would say I was a little more rebellious than Beecher in that I wanted to stay pure more out of fear of, like, soul ties, like being told that if you have sex with someone before marriage, like, your soul literally attaches to them and you'll never get it back. Or, you know, the examples of a crumbled up rose, you know, a youth pastor shows you a rose and like, this is you when you're a virgin. And then when someone comes along and you sleep with them, you're crumpled up. And then someone else comes along and you're crumpled up, and they keep taking the rose petals off of this rose. And then at the end they hold up a rose and like, who would want to marry this? You know, so lots of those ideations and ideologies that were impressed upon me.
I mean, I grew up in the same, obviously, culture and heard similar things, and it's just insane how girls were lifted up as far as their virginity, and boys, it was never a thing. No one was ever like, oh, look at that young man, he's a virgin. Like, that's not right. It was actually a negative that, even a little bit in church world, that would have been a negative. But, like, the whole phrases of, like, boys only want one thing from girls, and that's to get in their pants. I remember hearing that. And I remember thinking, oh, shoot, I've never even thought about that.
Right.
That's never crossed my mind. I guess I'm not a boy. Like, wait, is everyone thinking that? And then I would just play along. Actually, I wouldn't play along. I would be like, oh, no, I don't think of that because I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
And instead I should have been like, I don't think of that because I'm trans.
So that phrase, you know, that boys only want one thing to get into your pants. Like, that was something my dad, like, was a regular lecture for me. Even like as young as 10, he was preparing me. And one thing he'd say too is like, you know, April, you need to make sure you're constantly keeping your focus on Jesus and staying pure, because the devil's going to try to send a boy your way to mess you up, you know, to get you on the wrong path and away from God. So, and also my dad, which this is something that I've been dealing with in therapy, would sometimes brag about how I was staying pure for marriage and that I was going to stay a virgin for marriage, like from the pulpit. And I remember one time I was probably 13, maybe 12 or 13. And I had sang on stage, and my dad was part of his, you know, spiel of bragging on me, which he would brag about me a lot, about a lot of other things too. But one of the things he said was, so proud of her, you know, she's going to save herself and stay a virgin for married. Like, she's made that vow for marriage. And I remember afterwards I was in like the foyer of the church, and this cute boy who I thought was cute, was probably like 14 or 15, was a little older than me. He was like, you're that virgin chick. And I just felt so like gross that one, this kid was thinking about me as a virgin, but also I was a little embarrassed because like him and his friends were kind of laughing about it, like it was nerdy. And like, that was kind of the first thing in my head where I was like, okay, it's not cool to be a prude. And so I was like, I don't want to be a prude, but it was so instilled on me that I needed to stay a virgin, you know, because the Bible, like the other stuff's kind of a gray area, right? So I would definitely cross boundaries, like, once I started dating, like, in high school and whatnot, like, did some physical things, but sex was, like, something I would never do, so I would always give every whatever guy was dating, like, the spiel, like, I will not have sex with you because I'm a virgin.
I want to ask, did you ever hear your dad say that about your brothers? That they're virgins and they're going to wait till marriage?
Yes. Okay. I mean, he did tell them to save themselves for marriage too, but it wasn't like...
Was it a trophy that he bragged on stage for?
No, he didn't really brag on their virginity or their purity. He bragged on mine.
I think that's a gender thing, right?
Yeah.
If you had a sister, I imagine. You don't have a sister, but if you had a sister, I imagine that she would have been lumped into that, too.
It was also this, like, the boys could take care of themselves, and I was something that needed to be protected and preserved. Yeah. So there was definitely some gendered, you know, things. And also being... You know, going to women's events, which I hated women's events as a sidebar. And also, like, gendered-wise, I never really liked girly girls. I was not a girly girl. Like, I would have been considered a tomboy back then. Like, that's... People called me that. I liked playing in the mud. I liked playing tackle football with my brothers because I, like, wanted people to see that I was tough. And I think that was probably... I was a little bit rebellious. So that was probably a response to constantly, you know, being talked about as, like, some delicate... thing that needed to be protected. And I was always trying to prove, like, no, I am tough. Like, I can be tough just like the boys.
You're also tall. You're also taller than all the boys.
I was also taller than all the boys. And I played sports. So I ended up playing basketball in college. So you I was very athletic and played video games and did...
You went through a lot of, from what you told me, you went through a lot of different kind of style phases.
Yes.
Like, you had the freedom to explore with that, partly because you're a girl and girls are allowed to wear jeans and guys sweatshirts and, you know, like, you're allowed to do it. But yeah, talk about some of the stages you went through, because I think this is great. And maybe we can even put some pictures.
Oh gosh, I was such an awkward middle schooler. So in middle school, like, I had no style. I actually wore JNCOs, which were boys jeans, because I hated the feeling of jeans.
You cross-dressed in middle school? See, in church is just cool with that.
Yeah. Well, and that's also a double standard, too, of, like, girls wear guys' clothes all the time with sweatpants, sweatshirts, you know, that are considered, quote-unquote, guys. And anyway, that's just larger culture issues. So another stage, I went through a country phase. I wore, like, cowgirl boots, and that was more in college. And
what about those platforms? We have some shoes in a closet that are, like...
I went through a Spice Girl phase.
You're already like 5'8" in sixth grade.
And I loved they had these high-heeled platform shoes that they were like the tennis shoes on like 4, 5, 6 inches. I would just wear those to the mall. Like, I'm already in like 7th, 8th grade. I was probably already 5'7" or 5'8", and I'm wearing like 6-inch heels on top of that. So, and I was so skinny too. I looked ridiculous, but I
look cute.
But I will say that was something that I had that you did not have, was my parents pretty much let me dress myself as long as I was fully covered. So, you know, I couldn't wear like cute crop tops or anything. So I made up my own style, and I kind of got used to, like, people would think it was weird or laugh at me, but I really just didn't care because I liked it. So I was a very confident, tall, skinny weirdo.
You were cute. I've seen pictures. Cute and kind of an awkward, like, she'll grow into it stage. It was
well, I also had terrible bangs.
Oh yeah.
So no hairstyle. Yeah. Anyway, maybe we'll throw in pictures. I don't know.
I told y'all before we started that I was gonna ask questions that nobody else has asked to this point, and I'm living up to that promise. All right, sorry. Go back to dating.
Let me go back to high school. So before I started dating in high school, I was not allowed to date until I was 16. And on my 16th birthday, my parents bought me I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Josh Harris, which is basically on how dating is wrong and it's a sin and that you should always court. You should never be alone with someone of the opposite sex. I think the extreme of that was, like, don't even kiss until you're married. And my parents didn't buy me that because they were going to enforce all of that. They bought me that to show that they're not going to be as strict as that, so that I would be thankful. They were still very strict. But at least they weren't that bad. It was an interesting strategy. I might use it. I'm just kidding. But yeah, but I do remember I was 15, so it was before I was allowed to date, and I couldn't drive yet. So I did not have, like, any independence, and I remember feeling so smothered. And we had recently moved to Florida from Texas, so I didn't really have a lot of friends. I just felt very suffocated and really was going through some hormones. So I was like a horny little 15-year-old teenager who had no outlet for it. Like, I was never taught about, like, female pleasure. So I didn't even know about masturbating, really, like, that could even be a thing. So I was not doing that, but I was so sexually frustrated and I didn't really even know what it was. And I remember my dad was giving me his usual spiel of, like, you know, April, you gotta stay protected and keep your eyes on Jesus because you never know, one day Satan will send a guy your way to try to mess you up. And I remember thinking, like, oh, Satan, if you can hear me in my head, please send a guy my way. Like, I am going crazy here. I just want to make out with somebody, with something. So it was kind of like starting to backfire, that little talk. It was like, I don't even care anymore at this point. But I was also a very good Christian at the same time. Loved Jesus, loved going to church, like, definitely wanted to go into ministry. It was a fine line of following Jesus and really loving Christ and his sacrifice and all of that, but also wanting my freedom and wanting to do what I wanted and just explore like a teenager. So I also didn't like people telling me what I could not do.
You still don't like that.
I still don't like that. That's very true. If you tell me I can't do it, it makes me want to do it. Even if I didn't want to do it before you told me, then I'll just do it out of spite.
It's a fun marriage.
Yeah. So I don't need to go into all my relationships, but I dated on and off through high school. I dated one guy for like a year, my senior year of high school. Thought I was going to marry him, but it was just, you know, puppy love. Then I went off to college, played basketball.
At three different colleges.
Yeah. Well, I played basketball at two different colleges, and I played 1 year of semi-pro, but I went to a third college. So my freshman year, I went to a really strict Christian school. Actually, the school wasn't so strict. My basketball team was insanely strict in that I had to write down every little food item that I would eat. The coaches were a husband and a wife, and they told us at the beginning of the season that they abstained from sex during basketball season because they're that dedicated and they were so intense and so pressed, and it was just weird.
It's insane how far purity culture has its tentacles. I mean, just the fact that your basketball coaches would tell you that just says, like, I think the Christian church is elevating this purity thing.
Right.
Like, wait, like, honestly, I feel like if sex didn't exist, would the church even halfway look like what it does today? Like, if sex wasn't a thing, we just had babies by just a handshake, would church even be a thing? Because it's so much of it is purity culture.
It is so much purity culture. And just as a quick sidebar, I'm only focusing on the purity culture aspect of my childhood. Like, I actually did, I had a good childhood overall. Like, I don't want to make my dad sound like some, like, pure tyrannical person, because we had way more conversations about a lot of other things. This was just a small piece of it.
Hey, I didn't give this clause for my family. Well, okay, on the last episode, my childhood was pretty great too.
You didn't really talk about, like, your family though. It was more your experience. So I just want to clarify, you know, I very much love my family. They've been very supportive now. So I just feel like I just had to say it.
And I will say, I love your family and they're incredibly supportive and they're amazing people. So
yes,
they are awesome.
Yes. So hopefully whoever was listening didn't stop before that clause and they're like, April, we hate you. I don't even know where I was in college. So I transferred to a new college, which was Southwestern Assemblies of God University. And they had rules on rules on rules, rules that had rules and rules for the sake of rules. And we were not allowed to watch any R-rated movie except for Passion of the Christ. Oh, that's a fun little tidbit. I forgot to mention that, but on my 16th, after I turned 16, my very first date I ever went on, it was to see The Passion of the Christ in the movie theater. And it was like my dad's rule, because this guy had asked me out, and The Passion of the Christ happened to be in theaters at this time, so I'm dating myself a little bit. And he said, you know, yes, I'll let you go on the date with this guy, but you have to go see The Passion of the Christ together.
Yeah, that totally reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where Jerry has no time with his girlfriend, and so they go see Schindler's List and they make out in the back of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it totally reminds
me of that. Well, and in case you're wondering, it was a buzzkill for us. There was no making out in The Passion of the Christ. So, you know, point dad. Moving right along. At SAGU, which is this college that I was at my sophomore year, they had chapel every single day, and one week a semester, they would either have spiritual emphasis week or purity week. That's right, a whole week for purity, where they had chapel morning and night all dedicated to saving yourself for marriage. And at the end of this week, they gave an altar call for everyone who want. Oh, these were all mandatory, by the way. You had to go, or you could get, or you'd get fined. And you would go up to the altar call to sign this purity pledge card, where you would vow to save yourself for marriage, and you would say, "I sign your name, am a," and then you would check virgin or secondary virgin.
Oh my gosh.
And a secondary virgin was someone who had messed up already and had had sex, but was recommitting their life state. And there was one dude from the stage who was like, "I've seen God restore girls' hymens."
Ugh.
To like virgin state. Just ridiculous. Like, there's so many ways that your hymen can break that is not sex related. It's just very stupid.
How did the student body respond to purity week? And I don't know if you've ever thought of this, like, boys, girls, male, female, was the response the same? Like, did the boys feel the same pressure to go forward and sign it?
Or? So I feel like pretty much everybody went forward, because at this school, if they suspected that you weren't living right for God, they would put you on a blacklist. Mm-hmm. And they kicked people out a lot. And okay. You wouldn't get your money back. I will say, though, I did look back, because everyone would look back to see who wasn't forward, because then you would obviously know that those people are having sex. And there were just like a few football players who I don't even think were paying attention, just sitting in the back, because we had a football team. So they were the only ones that didn't go forward that I saw. It was just a handful of them. They were just like, "I don't care about this."
That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. The next big thing that happened for me in this purity culture life was I had transferred schools. I was going to a different Christian college because that was the only place I would take my credits. And I went on a couple dates with this one guy who was on the baseball team. And at one point, I had just turned 21. And so it was the first time that I had bought a drink. So I was with this guy and we went to a house party. It was like one of his friend's houses. And I had drank. I wouldn't even say that I was drunk, but I was too, I just didn't feel comfortable driving. And also I would have had to drive back to campus where there's like campus security and stuff. And it was a Christian school. So he like offered that I could sleep on the couch and was like, "Okay, sure. I'll sleep on the couch." And so like we had kissed, we were kissing, making out, whatever. And then I had stopped because he was starting to go, you know, possibly crossing a line. And I just said, "Hey, just heads up, like, I'm a virgin. I am saving myself for marriage. I do not want to have sex with you. Like, I will not sleep with you." And I literally spent probably 10 minutes explaining to him why I was not going to have sex with him. And I didn't really know much about him. I learned later that he was pretty much a player. But long story short, and this is traumatic, so trigger warning, sexual assault. But he basically said after my spiel that I had killed the mood. He's like, "Let's just go to sleep." At this point, it was probably 1 in the morning. So I fell asleep and I woke up to him inside me, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think I woke up like right when it happened. So I pushed him off and was able to stop him from continuing. And I left. I left and got out of there. And yeah, so I drove back. At this point, it was probably 6 in the morning. So it was just a few hours later. I didn't sleep that long. And went back to my dorm room and just bawled and cried and felt so violated and felt like I had waited, you know, my entire life up until that point to save myself for marriage. And, you know, all of the little tidbits of purity culture of, you know, now I'm worthless and what guy's going to want that rose, you know, the water bottle that gets spit in by all the guys, who's going to want to drink that now? Mm-hmm. Because one thing that purity culture teaches, the importance of staying pure, but it does not teach you about consent. No one ever taught me that it could be taken from me. You know, purity culture is always taught like you need to choose to save yourself, but they never talk about what happens when you don't choose, when someone chooses that for you. So it was a real I went to a very dark place. And that next morning I had to go to work. My dad called me because he called me all the time, and he was a very, very bubbly person. And he called me the next morning and was like, "Hey, April, how's it going?" And I was not planning on telling him because I just knew he would be really upset at me. I thought he would hate me for it, but I couldn't hide my emotions. And I just started crying on the phone, hearing his voice and how happy he was. And my life felt like it had just like stopped. And he started asking me what was wrong. And I was like, I can't tell you. He eventually gets it out of me because, you know, at this point he thinks I'm probably dying. And so I told him everything. I told him, you know, where I was, that I'd been drinking, what the guy did. And he responded surprisingly well, asked, you know, some weird questions like, "Are you pregnant?" I was like, "Dad, I know you know how sex works." No, I'm not pregnant. You know, but then he immediately went to like, don't feel shame about this. He was like, "April, you didn't choose this. Like, this could have happened to anybody. Like, this is 100% the guy's fault." He really wanted me to tell him the guy's name. I wouldn't tell him because I didn't trust what my dad would do to him, because my dad was very angry. But thankfully, he was not angry with me and just showed nothing but grace and love for me, which was my fear before telling him. But one thing that I did notice in the months after was my dad never mentioned my purity again from the pulpit.
Gosh.
And it wasn't anything that we ever talked about. And I didn't even like when he mentioned it before, but it was just like, before that incident, he bragged about it. Yeah. And after that incident, he didn't. Mm. So that was just something that I kind of dealt with internally. And I honestly don't even know that I recognized it until years later that had happened.
It was pretty recent in therapy that you came back with that revelation.
Yeah. So, you know, it was just the subtle things of just being looked at differently, mm-hmm. even though I didn't choose it. So... Mm. Moving forward in my dating life, I went through to a really dark spot, and I felt constant shame, like I had ruined my life because, you know, purity culture puts so much emphasis on virginity, and that mm-hmm. if you're no longer a virgin, what man's going to want you? And I thought, what Christian guy's going to want me? I've messed up. I'm now damaged goods. Mm. So I honestly just kind of made up my mind that, you know, if I'm going to feel this dirty and this shame over something that I didn't even enjoy, that I didn't choose, I might as well just have sex. And so I kind of made up my mind, whatever next guy comes along that I like, I'm just going to sleep with him.
Yeah. Well, it's a way of you taking back control.
Yeah, I do think, yeah, I think it was a way of me, without realizing it, of been like, you know, I'm going to take control of this feeling. And, you know, even if I still have shame, at least it's something that I'm choosing and mm-hmm. not something that was done to me. It was a way of, like, empowering myself to, I don't know, just take control of my life again. So I ended up dating a guy for 2 years. I don't know, probably a year or so after that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we had sex and it was fine. It was, you know, the world didn't end. And I still felt shame, but it wasn't like I thought it would be. But then the next big tragic thing happens is that my dad ends up getting diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. And then a week later, my grandfather, the pastor grandfather, died. And so my grandfather died. My dad gets diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and my dad dies 4 months later. And in the 2 years leading up to this, my dad and I had a little bit of a strained relationship. And it was really more, I had a taste of freedom and I was dating, you know, I was having my first kind of adult relationship that I had kept from my dad because I knew he wouldn't approve. And I think my dad could sense that I wasn't telling him everything and sense that he was losing some control and was still wanting to protect me like he had always had. And so he would give me regular lectures. And there was one time he was giving me a lecture and he said something that honestly still haunts me sometimes, was that, April, if you don't turn your life around, which he didn't even know what I was doing. He just, you know, thought I had an attitude sometimes. But he said, Abriel, if you don't turn your life around, God's going to do something drastic to wake you up. And, you know, it wasn't long after that that my dad got cancer and died. So he died 4 months after he was diagnosed. And I had broken up with the guy almost as soon as my dad got cancer, thinking that it was God punishing me for having sex. And there was a long time after my dad died that I wondered if it was God's way of waking me up because I had sex before marriage.
And you've talked about this in other podcasts, and obviously we've talked about it a lot, but I mean, your dad, who was so preaching faith, believing faith, dying of cancer, even though you all had so much faith for him to live. I mean, as Christians, we're kind of programmed to, okay, well, why did that happen? And, you know, I mean, even in the book of Job, his friends are like, oh, bad stuff happened to you because you did bad stuff. Like that, right. That's how we justify it. And so it's only natural that you look at an event that you can't explain any other way that's bad, and you do what Job's friends did, and you do what other people do, which is, okay, well, then why did this happen? Oh, it's because I did bad things. And of course, because the church lifts up purity culture so much, you go straight to that. You don't go to lying or speeding. You go straight to that.
Right. Well, and my dad's death and not being healed, it was like really the first thing that led me to start deconstructing. Like, I was still a Christian. Even when I was having... You know, when I was dating that guy for 2 years, I was still a Christian.
You were trying to save
him. I was trying to convert him, like, hardcore. He was agnostic. And I would try to get him to come to church. And I still, like, led worship on weekends and still, you know, prayed and read my Bible and, like, still really loved Jesus through all of that. But when my dad was diagnosed, like, we really believed that he was going to be healed. Like, had no doubts about it. Like, we were Pentecostal, laid hands on him. Like, we just knew he would be healed. And when God didn't answer that prayer, that was really the first thing that kind of led me to start questioning some things about my faith. But it also made me completely shut down my sexuality because I had somehow associated me messing up, quote unquote, with his death. So I was like, you know, and as a way to honor him, because, you know, purity and was really important to him, especially for me, that was like, okay, I'm not having sex again before I get married. I'm going to shut that down. I'm going to be pure. Like, I'm not even going to cross any boundaries. And I really didn't. When my dad died, I had just started going to Regent, which is where I meet Beecher, but Beecher wasn't there yet. Beecher comes a year later, but the year that I was at Regent before Beecher got there, I dated two different guys from Texas who were good Christian guys, were wanting to cross boundaries. I didn't want to. Like, I just felt like my sexuality was a little bit dead. It was hard to get it going. So I kind of shut it down again as a result of trauma and grief and lots of things.
I would say why did you go to Regent? So why did you choose Regent? Would you say your dad's death had a piece in that?
Yeah. So my dad had originally told me about Regent. At this point, I was wanting to go into journalism. I had got my undergrad in broadcasting and I wanted to go into journalism, maybe be on Fox News at the time was what I wanted to do.
She was going
to
be the next Sarah Palin, everybody.
Oh, yeah, actually she was part of the reason that she inspired me to go into journalism. It's so embarrassing now. I actually wanted to go to University of Texas and really thought I would get in because I had like really good grades and good test scores and somehow didn't get in.
I wanted to go to Florida State, had really good grades, good test scores, and somehow didn't get in. So
yeah, so Regent was not our first choice, but we ended up going there anyway. And I remember telling my dad, because he was sick when I went, that I didn't want to go because I wanted to stay there with him because we didn't know how long he would have. And he told me that, like, he's like, on my dying wish, if I'm dying, like, I want you to go. Like, let that be the thing. Like, you can't stay here. Like, he fought me on it, would not let me stay. So I went, mainly because of my dad, too. So I go to Regent, date a couple guys. Nothing really becomes of it. I get to the point where I'm like, you know, I would rather be single the rest of my life than live with any of these annoying men because they were a little annoying and needy at the time. Also, I do find it interesting that the two guys that I dated before Beecher were super masculine guys. Like, one was a bodybuilder and one was a fireman, and they were both really muscular, and they both had, like, a little bit of toxic masculinity. Like, maybe not toxic, but just had this, like, need to, like, protect and, like, be the hero. And it drove me insane. Like, I hated it because it was like, I don't need you guys to protect me. And so I found that annoying about them. And I just now realize then Beecher comes along who's not like
I am not like that. I'm like, I'm not protecting you. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I love you and I'll help you protect you and you help me protect me.
Yeah. So then my second year of regent, I am sitting in the admissions office working and I hear this voice that says, hey, can I print my syllabus off? And I look up and I see Beecher. And I worked at the admissions office, so I recognized Beecher's name from the folder that I would, you know, look through. And that's how we met.
Beautiful moment. So now really fast, summarize where you are at headspace-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Sexuality, gender, dating, all of that. When we meet at that moment of the syllabus print.
When we meet of the syllabus print, I'm actually dating the fireman.
Okay.
Long distance. So he was in Texas. So, but I'd only been dating him for maybe a few weeks at this point. It was very new. But sexuality is still squashed. Nothing's going on there. I'm a year into grief and I'm feeling a little more, I guess myself, like trying to enjoy life after my dad had died.
There you have it, folks. That was the moment. So you might wonder why we just spent 30 minutes and 30 minutes going into our backstory. And the reason is because, through therapy and through our relationship, all of this comes up again. Like mm-hmm. all of these threads from church, from evangelical culture, from these experiences of people we dated and how we viewed ourselves and viewed others. It's all stuff we had to work through. So I felt like it was important. We felt like it was important to walk through this. Mm-hmm. And now on the next episode, we can really get into our journey, which is really what the podcast is about. These first three have been kind of background where we are now, our background. Now it's
interesting too. I'll just give a little foreshadowing or like a slight spoiler. We meet where both of our sexualities are like shut down.
Yeah.
When we eventually start dating a few months after we meet, the sexuality comes alive for both of us,
yes.
which creates a perfect storm of trauma.
Oh my gosh. Next
we're
time.
We're both hit with trauma.
Next time on Non-Binary Marriage, the atomic bomb.
It's so bad. Yes. So we will go into that. It gets a little dark, but hopefully we'll tell it in a lighthearted, fun way, maybe.
Yeah, we'll bring some levity to it. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time on the Non-Binary Marriage.
Thanks for listening to the Non-Binary Marriage podcast. We would love if you would take the time to leave us a review or a 5-star rating wherever you listen. And if you need to get a hold of us, you can email us at nonbinarymarriage@gmail.com or individually on TikTok or Instagram at April A. Joy or at Hello Beecher. Stay tuned for new episodes coming out weekly. Thanks again for listening.